true. Our CFL insider Dave Naylor now joining us on the show. Dave, how are you? We're talking hotels here. What are the hotels like in Winnipeg right now?
Well, that is the question. In fact, I was just talking to somebody about this 10 minutes ago about, you know, when you see the NBA has a $150 million bubble, you know that the CFL's bubble is going to be drastically scaled down for that. So I think, you know, their bubble is basically, I think, going to be cordoned off hotels, you know, like, and that's one of the real challenges. I mean, with the money that CFL players make, and now they're being offered a chance to play for a third of their salaries, and committing to essentially living in a hotel room for up to 3 months. And I know because of the caseload in Canada, the hope for the CFL is that, you know, they will have to begin the season in a quote-unquote bubble, and that as things go along, I mean, the province of Manitoba had its eighth or ninth day in a row without a new case. So it's about as COVID-free as any place in North America. It's actually funny, you know, the opposite. You've got, like, the NBA where the worry is that the community is going to infect the players, and in the CFL, the concern is that the players, you know, a lot of whom are coming from those areas, Florida, Texas, California, Mississippi, the Carolinas, would infect the community potentially. So, but it is, you know, I think that's the league's hope, is that because Canada is so far ahead of the U.S. on this, that eventually your players might not be confined to the bubble and that fans may actually be able to attend games.
You know, there at one point, Dave, you weren't very optimistic that there would be a 2020 season. Has your outlook changed at all?
I guess it's improved a little bit, but my sense is still, I just think there is such an enormous to-do list for the league, you know, to get all this done. They've got to get a deal done with the players on a 2020 CBA and refine the 2021 CBA. Now, whether that one has to be done, but they got to get down the road and have some strong understandings about that one as well. They've got to get approval from the province of Manitoba and the city of Winnipeg, which I believe those conversations are well down the road, but that's not done. They've got to get money from the federal government, which I think is going to be positioned in such a way to ask the government to pay the players. So they're not actually giving money to the owners in the league. And, you know, these are guys, working class guys who are going to play for a third of their salaries. A lot of them would be collecting CERB if they weren't playing, and most of the money is probably going to be, you know, dumped back into the economy pretty quickly. So you could make an argument on that. They got to get a refined broadcast deal with our employer, and then you got to pull off all the logistics. And if we were sitting here on May the 9th and not July the 9th, I would feel a lot better about the chance. It just feels to me like an awful lot to do for something that I don't think can drift into August.
Dave, just crossing your eyes over to what has happened in the NHL, you know, maybe as a precedent for the CFL, in terms of getting a labor deal done with a return to play deal. Has that surprised you with the fluidity of that, watching that happen, particularly for a long-term deal? And is there a chance that could happen in the CFL?
It has, because, of course, you know, the history of acrimony between the NHL and the NHL Players Association, yeah, has been well documented. And But I'll say it, and this is one real difference, and it's funny, the CFL has a commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, who's a former player, you know, but the relations with the players have not been very good, really, over the last couple of years. And they hit a real sort of rock back in the spring when the league first announced that they were not going to start training camp on time. The CFL Players Association said, well, you're in violation of the CBA right now, and any player who wants out of his contract should be allowed out of his contract to, you know, find a job in the NFL or whatever you can do. And the league really took that as opportunism, and that really chilled the relationship. And there basically wasn't a lot of communication for months as this has gone along. And I contrast that to Gary Bettman, who, you know, when I watched him on the Mike Greenberg special that we ran on TSN, the Return to Play special, and Mike Greenberg was interviewing him, every sentence Gary Bettman said was in engagement with the players, you know, in consultation with the players, with our players. I mean, it was so clear that he understood that to get this thing to happen, the players had to be lock in step. So I am kind of surprised, because there is a lot of pressure on both sides. And, you know, you could certainly see why there might be, at least this season, a lot more to gain for the owners than the players. By the time you get to next year, it's more of the players than the owners. So it is kind of surprising and impressive to me how quickly things came together in the National Hockey League and how they used this to hammer out, you know, a road to the future.
Our CFL insider Dave Naylor joining us. in another part of the country, there is a big story when it comes to this league, and you know, you hope that one day we can talk about the Battle of Alberta, and it's the Calgary Stampeders versus the Edmonton. I'll leave that blank for now. Do you see that organization changing their names in time for the 2020 season or 2021 season?
They're going to make a decision very quickly. That's what I do know, that this is going to happen pretty aggressively and then by the end of July. And they're going to go back to the communities in northern communities in Canada where they've been before, that they've engaged with. They have some programs there that, you know, they go up there and players do things with young people, and they are going to speak to some MPs, you know, maybe some that they haven't spoke to before. They are taking, I think, suggestions on organizations that maybe weren't part of the consultation process. This all started for them in 2015. When there was a prominent Inuit leader who said, you know, we don't like this. At that time, the previous president, Len Rhodes, you know, led the sort of delegation up into the north and say, okay, well, we're going to do this in consultation with them. And it was amazing, the statement that Jordan Tutu put out last night on this.
Yeah.
The reaction that got, you know, I read it and I thought, man, that is like authentic and so well written and expressed. And really, for the sake of the Eskimos, fortunate that they pretty much are doing what Jordan Tutu prescribed in his note that went out on Twitter last night, where basically it's like, hey, and even, you know, I when I was talking to the Eskimos and asking somebody in their organization, sort of like, well, why don't you guys just like change the name because there's so much momentum? And the sense I got from them was that, you know, they've all the whole road, it's been, hey, we don't want to do anything without consulting with the people whose name this reflects. And so if you've done that all along, you don't want to say, actually, we don't need you anymore. We've got to make this decision by ourselves. We're dumping the name. Because there are a lot of people that like it. And you saw that Jordan Tutu said it doesn't offend him. I think it's a generational thing for some people. Like, a lot of younger people don't like it. Older people might be okay with it because they grew up under that name. But Jordan Tutu, as a relatively young guy, still didn't have a problem with it. So it's going to be tough because obviously there's going to be some people who don't like it. So, you know, they're looking for a consensus. You're never going to get 100% consensus. What do you do if you find that 70% of the people like the name, but 30 don't, and the 30 who don't really don't like it? It's a tricky situation. I kind of inquired a little bit because there have been some words that, you know, they may have registered another name to prepare for this or something, but apparently they haven't. Like, the one you hear kicked around is the Edmonton Empire, because then they could keep the EE, right? All the logo and everything would be the same, but apparently there's no name, other name registered. But this thing is, I think the one thing they don't want is this to kind of drag over them, you know, for months and be seen as kind of like the Washingtons, where it's like they're trying to avoid it. Edmonton has never been that way. They've had a very different approach to it. They've been open-minded to the conversation, and I think they want to put this behind them one way or another very quickly.
Yeah, very, very strong first-hand statement put out by Jordan Tutu that I thought really encapsulated the whole situation really, really cleanly. Another case of a, you know, of an athlete getting involved and voicing an opinion that was really, really good. Dave, when they do, start to play, any idea of, is it the timing, the gap between games, the couple of games a day, anything talked about even from a term of scheduling and how this might look?
Well, and the one thing in the CFL you have also to deal with is that you've got nine teams, so you don't have a balanced schedule. And what they usually do to kind of accommodate that, that's the reason the CFL has three bye weeks. Like, some people say, how come the CFL has three bye weeks? Well, because when Randy Ambrosi took over the league, there were some teams playing three games in 12 days or four in 17. Mm-hmm. And he said, this isn't safe. You know, that's not a reasonable thing to ask professional football players to do in any league. So they put in three bye weeks. And they don't have that. Well, one of the things that the players are being asked to agree to in part of this amended CBA for 2020 is games that could occur on 4 or 5 days rest. Now, part of why they think that they can do that probably is you're talking about a 6-game regular season, not an 18-game regular season. But in terms of, you know, how this is going to be laid out, it's not altogether clear, but there is certainly an advisory to the players that one of the things they're going to have to agree to is less than the standard number of days off in at least some games. And they're basically going into kind of a tournament format, right? Like, eight of the teams are going to advance into the quote unquote playoffs. So you're playing 6 games to warm up and basically it's almost like a 6-game preseason.
Yeah.
And then you're going to play a tournament. That's essentially what it is. They're only going to eliminate one team.
All signs point towards The NFL having a season because it's the NFL, Dave. Is that business just too big to allow something like a virus to get in the way of a season being completed, as crazy as that sounds?
I don't think anyone's too big for this, honestly. And talking to even some CFL guys who, you know, regularly have conversations with people in the National Football League, their counterparts, you know, they've been telling me that over the last 2 or 3 weeks, a lot of them who believed that the league was going to play now have their doubts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's all kinds of issues here. Like, I don't know if there's this ridiculous thing coming up about don't exchange jerseys, but, you know, knock the crap out of each other for 3 hours before that. And even, like, just the way football locker rooms are, it's kind of a competitive advantage thing. And other sports probably do this as well, but it's really dramatic in football. The home locker room is like, you know, a ballroom. But the visitor's locker room is usually a lot tighter than that. And it's designed that way. And the other thing, in terms of, you know, virus spread, football players tend to be laid out in their locker rooms, and they tend to socialize in groups by position, right? You'll see the offensive line eating dinner over here, right? And the defensive backs doing something else over here. There's a real kind of team within a team aspect of football. What you think about coronavirus, what do you do if the offensive line, you know, rips through, or if coronavirus rips through your offensive line and knocks out six of them, you know, a week of a game? Like, that's something that the NFL may have. It's unlikely you might get, you know, an offensive lineman, you know, a cornerback and a kicker are the three guys. They're probably going to be from the same position. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when you think of how they practice, where they're located in the locker room, and how they socialize, you know, when they're not in uniform. So, you know, the only leagues that seem like they've got the best shot at this are, and I was just talking to somebody in the CFL about this right now. We were talking with the NFL and saying, okay, these guys are going to be living in their homes. Some of them have kids that are going to school. Mm-hmm. So they're going home. Their kids are coming home from school. They're interacting with their kids, their wives, and then they're going back to the locker room the next day. I mean, I know it's far better for life than living in a bubble, but when you're talking about the numbers of players on an NFL roster, I believe their rosters expanded to this last CBA, and they may be playing with bigger rosters even this summer. Excuse me for not knowing that off the top of my head, but you know, it's not like a basketball team. I mean, it's
your mid 50s.
Your mid 50s, and they're going to expand the practice rosters to, I think, 16. So you're getting up to, with injured guys, practice rosters, and rosters, you're getting up to about 70, 75 guys, you know, to be able to manage. So it's the bigger the number, the tougher the logistics, the more things that can go wrong. Look, there may be an NFL season that gets to the end, but I'm telling you, there are going to be some hiccups along the way.
And college football just continues on, right? The Big Ten announces today they will play a conference-only schedule, and you talk about one behemoth and another.
But you are watching the college football numbers. You know, you're having teams with 9, 10, 11 positive tests.
Well, LSU 30, you know, Carolina the other day. And the interesting one for me, and it's funny, I heard you guys on radio talking about this conference the other day, or earlier in the show, in baseball, is the SEC in football, right? Because the SEC in football is, that's not sport, that's religion. Mm-hmm. Like, that is woven into the fabric of life there. It also happens to be hardcore Donald Trump Republican territory. Like, when Donald Trump appears on the screen of an SEC stadium, it's cheers, right? Not like it is when he's in his home city of New York. So it's people who politically lean in his direction, people who love football as much as anything in life. That's going to be the interesting one for me to watch and see, you know, in places like, you know, Alabama and LSU and Tennessee and Texas A&M, are they going to let anything stand in the way of a college football season? But we're starting to see it already. I mean, even when I was talking to a guy at Oklahoma State, you know, 2 months ago, and he was saying, yeah, we're going back to spring ball and we're planning on having full stadiums and all this. Well, you know, I don't think they're having full stadiums. No. Maybe they will in Oklahoma. My God, they hosted a Donald Trump rally. I shouldn't say that, But like a lot of things, every time somebody says you're doing something in this world, I say, no, you're planning on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll wait till you're doing it when you get there.
Yeah, right? Plans and protocols. That's the world that we live in right now.
Exactly. Now, it's that was, you know, you saw, like, there was a story today that Texas high school football may not go. Again, there's another activity that's not far from religion in that state.
That is society being broken up right there. Dave, always appreciate this. Good chatting with you, and all the best to you and the family at the moment.
Hey, it'd be great to see you guys again.
Yeah.
It's almost as good to talk to you.
Yeah, almost as good. Thanks very much.
See ya. Bye.
There's Dave Naylor, TSN's football insider.